Peace Corps.
Corpo de Paz.
Peace Corps.
Corps de la Paix.
Peace Corps.
If you do well, then the Peace Corps will be developed, and more Americans will go abroad.
I was very far away, and I was all alone in my village.
It was what I really was afraid to admit to myself I hoped could happen.
In my village, they were really welcome.
These are all Peace Corps voices. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps. Staying in touch from abroad used to mean relying on the mail. Peace Corps staff suggested that volunteers take tape recorders so they could send spoken letters home. Ever since, volunteers have discovered a wealth of sounds. You're hearing music from Nepal. I'm Amy Mayer. Welcome to Peace Corps Voices.
My name is Meryl Blau Menon. I served in the Peace Corps in Ghana from 1961 to 1963.
Menon attended President John F. Kennedy's Rose Garden Ceremony on August 28, 1961. Her group and another had just finished Peace Corps training on U.S. college campuses.
I want to express my great pleasure at welcoming all of you who are the first members of the Peace Corps to be graduated from these schools and also the first members of the Peace Corps to go overseas.
I remember being told that it was probably hotter in Washington than it was in Ghana at the time.
I feel a particular satisfaction because this is the most immediate response, the Peace Corps, that I think the country has seen to the whole spirit, which I tried to suggest in my inaugural about the contribution which we could make to our country.
But it was obviously an exciting time, and each of us had a chance to shake President Kennedy's hand and have a photo taken of that moment.
So I hope you realize, and I know you do, that the future of the Peace Corps really rests with you. If you do well, then the Peace Corps will be developed, and more Americans will go abroad. And we'll find a greater and greater response to this idea of serving our country.
In the past half century, more than 200,000 Americans have served in the Peace Corps. When Menon served, she took a big, heavy tape recorder with her to West Africa. She also had a new master's degree in teaching and an assignment at a boarding school in Cape Coast, Ghana. She'd teach French in this former British colony.
Hello, Mommy and Daddy. Welcome to my little rendition of sounds from Ghana.
In this tape for her parents, Menon introduced some of her students, who then had a conversation in a Ghanaian language. In training, Menon had learned a little of a local language, but she hardly used it.
When I was at my school, the headmaster wanted me to speak in English or French because they wanted the students to become more proficient in English.
On the same tape, Menon told her parents she felt right about what she was doing. Her job was frustrating at times, but she was glad to be in Ghana working on the Peace Corps' mission. From the beginning, the Peace Corps has had three goals. The first was to provide trained workers to countries that requested them. Many volunteers worked in education. Louise Shullery Cox was inspired to sign up after hearing a friend talk about her cousin serving in South America.
She would gather us together when we were in high school and read the letters that he sent back, and that always fascinated me.
Cox graduated from college in 1967 and accepted an assignment in Sierra Leone.
The stereotypical Peace Corps volunteer experience, I was very far away and I was all alone in my village.
The village chief initially expressed surprise when she arrived. He'd been expecting Louis, not Louise. But quickly, Cox found herself welcomed. She embraced her new community.
There was a beautiful freedom to be myself. There was a warmth with people I had not experienced coming from white middle-class America. People related to each other from their heart.
Ali, I want you to tell me the story of Mary and Joseph when they went to Bethlehem.
She worked at a school built by missionaries who had translated some of their stories and hymns into local languages.
You're telling Creole. Come sit here. Begin. You can begin.
Each school day began with music.
Singing is a way of life in West Africa, and in Sierra Leone, there is no exception. The following songs are sung by the students of the UMC Primary School, Jayamanimi Choral, Kono District, Sierra Leone.
Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya, kumbaya.
Cox served during the peak years of the Peace Corps. In the late 1960s, as many as 15,000 volunteers were in the field. She never returned to Sierra Leone, but says the experience remains dear to her.
West Africa is in my heart. It always will be. A piece of me is there, and a piece is in my heart. You can hear the emotion. I think I came alive and became more of a human by being in West Africa.
She married another Sierra Leone volunteer and says they couldn't afford to travel abroad on their school teacher salaries. Since they wanted their children to have international experiences, they took jobs at schools in Brazil and Saudi Arabia and spent 9 years outside the United States. Today, she lives in Connecticut, where she helps recent immigrants with English. By 1970, volunteer numbers dropped below 10,000. Today, there are fewer than 9,000 volunteers in the Peace Corps. But its earlier popularity no doubt contributed to an undergraduate program that prepared students to be volunteers with a slightly more heady task than teaching, offering teacher training without much teaching experience.
My name is Jim Green. I served in the Peace Corps in Peru from 1970 to 1973.
Green participated in a college program for math and science majors. As part of his bachelor's degree, he studied education and Spanish and spent 2 college summers training for the Peace Corps. After graduation, Green and his classmates went to Central and South America to support older, experienced teachers.
You look at it and you go, why would they listen to us?
But they did. Peru was on the brink of education reform. Green says rote memorization was on the way out. Teachers welcomed ideas about how to replace it. During summer sessions, Peruvian teachers would travel long distances to reach programs Green and another volunteer offered. He described his work on a tape recorded in his one-room apartment while his neighbors had a party in the street below.
We've seen the teachers go from people that were trying to figure out what we wanted them to say to people that we can give some materials to and say, all right, right now we'll just let you kind of mess around with these things and see what sort of things you can find out about them.
Green told his family since the teachers hadn't learned that way, they'd never tried hands-on teaching. But the teachers quickly saw how students could discover science themselves. The rural teachers scoffed when the American volunteers promised to visit during the school year. But Green and his colleague were determined. They took crowded buses and then trekked on foot through the mountains to reach one remote school, lugging a film projector with them. They recorded their adventures as they went.
So we finally get there and we get to observe a class, and it was really, really good.
The teachers gave the students empty plastic bottles and a seed to plant inside. This activity flowed directly from the workshops the Peace Corps volunteers had conducted. In the evening, the volunteers used the film projector to show Spanish-dubbed Encyclopedia Britannica science films. Green says people loved the free movies. Inspired by the Peruvian teachers, Green went on to a long teaching career of his own.
I was just amazed at the dedication that Peruvian teachers had, given the lack of materials and how much sacrifice they had to do themselves to get to where they were teaching and everything.
He still keeps in touch with many members of his training group and has returned to Peru twice. He lives in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and has seen some of his former students serve in the Peace Corps. 4 decades later, countries continue to request Peace Corps volunteers for teacher training.
My name is Blair Cochran. I served in the Peace Corps in the Gambia from 2007 to 2009.
Cochran entered the Peace Corps with a few years of teaching experience. Her assignment involved supporting primary school teachers, many of whom had been recruited and placed in classrooms without formal training. She worked with the Ministry of Education to change that.
They were undertaking this sort of massive teacher training initiative for the teachers in my region.
Teachers came to classes and workshops on weekends and during school holidays. just as Peruvian teachers had in the 1970s. Cochrane and some seasoned Gambian colleagues created the programs based on a national curriculum promoted by the ministry.
As a Peace Corps volunteer, you're not there to impose an agenda. You're there to work with the people on the ground and figure out what their wants and needs are and how you can work with them to achieve that.
She enjoyed planning and executing the workshops with her Gambian colleagues. She says at every session, they taught the teachers an activity or song to take back to their classrooms.
You used to say, if you're enjoying this, think how much a 4-year-old kid is going to enjoy this, or a 6-year-old kid.
After the Peace Corps, Cochrane taught for a year in Banjul, the capital of the Gambia. She returned to the United States less than 2 years ago. At first, her glib answer to, how was Africa, was hot. But she says that fact contributed much to her experience.
There were a lot of days where I would say to myself in the morning, okay, I'm going to visit 2 schools today, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and then I'll come home. And I would only make it to 1 school because it was hot and I was exhausted.
That gave her a new perspective on how climate and infrastructure can impact a country's progress. Now she runs an after-school program in a neighborhood in Boston, a city that was new to her.
I found some of the things that I had learned in Peace Corps to, you know, look for people who are really active in the community. Look for people who are known for doing certain things. Look for places where people gather. You know, all those sort of community entry techniques that they teach you for a village in Africa, actually, they work pretty well in Dorchester, too.
When you think about Peace Corps, you probably picture remote African villages. It's certainly what Michelle Wynn Baptiste imagined when she applied to join. And she was thrilled when Peace Corps offered her a job in West Africa.
I had initially prepared myself mentally for being out there in the middle of nowhere with no running water.
But then they took a closer look at her medical file.
My peanut allergy banned me from Africa and Asia.
Peace Corps gave her 24 hours to choose between Romania and St. Lucia. She chose the Caribbean. So instead of trekking off to some isolated village, Baptiste rented an apartment with all the basic amenities in Castries, St. Lucia's capital. She found the living less intimate than she'd expected. She'd heard about the connections volunteers made in rural villages and imagined they had nearly familial relationships with their hosts.
So I think I was in some ways disappointed.
And in terms of bragging rights, somehow serving on a tropical island not far from the U.S. border can feel like it doesn't measure up. She didn't let these things taint her experience, and ultimately she made plenty of close friends. The small island of St. Lucia has had Peace Corps volunteers for all 50 years.
We are here to witness tonight the 35th anniversary of Peace Corps St. Lucia.
The country celebrated the Corps' anniversary during Baptiste's service in the mid-1990s.
We are also here to celebrate the indelible contribution that the Peace Corps has offered to St. Lucia over the last 35 years.
During this celebration, several St. Lucians remembered Peace Corps teachers they'd had as children. But Baptiste says by the time she was there, St. Lucia no longer had volunteers in the primary and secondary schools.
Because it's all supposed to be about, human resource training now instead of direct education.
Her assignment with the Ministry of Adult Education technically fell under community development. She put together a manual for adult literacy instructors to go with an existing curriculum. Then, the ministry asked her to create a daily literacy show for TV. Eventually, she and the St. Lucians agreed, instead, to launch a campaign encouraging adults to attend existing classes. Adults already taking the course wrote this public service announcement. It takes place in a kitchen.
Good afternoon.
A mother who can't read discovers she's been spraying a clearly labeled poison near food in her home. She resolves to begin literacy classes. Baptiste produced the segment, and it aired on TV stations across the island.
Education, education, this is the foundation. Our rising population needs sound education. Be recognized anywhere you go. Have your certificate to show. Enjoy any kind of happiness. Knowledge is the key to success.
Beyond education, volunteers work in agriculture and natural resources, community organizing, health, and small business development. The Peace Corps' second goal is promoting cultural exchange abroad. Through their daily presence, Peace Corps volunteers introduce their hosts to American culture. They're also immersed in the local culture. Some volunteers come to feel fully accepted by their hosts.
Mabanuam. Baholomena Bakele Todd Merkerell Chapman. Mada'era served in the Peace Corps from 2006 to 2008 in the village of Siu in the country of Togo, West Africa.
It's there that Merkerell Chapman learned the ways of the Nauta people. He was the only American in Siu.
The first year just felt like an epic failure.
Merkerell Chapman and three Nauta colleagues set up a computer center. They hoped to raise money that could then be used for microloans. But Merkerell Chapman and two of his co-workers discovered their other partner was in it for the money.
He was a bit corrupt, I should say, and he was looking to maybe build the thing up and then run away with all the resources. So once that became clear, we shut it down.
Merkerell Chapman felt burned, but his two remaining partners put the sting behind them.
They were ready to try something new. They also were really excited to work with me.
Encouraged, he resolved to try again. Along the way, Merkerell Chapman says he became enamored of the Nauta culture and comfortable speaking the language. He got to participate in many ceremonies, such as this celebration for a Nauta doctor who returned home after serving as a peacekeeper in Ivory Coast.
Nauta wanted me to become Nauta. They would say, you're going to become Nauta, you're going to marry a Nauta woman, you're going to speak Naudum.
Toward the end of his 2 years in Togo, Merkerell Chapman accepted his village chief's invitation to be initiated as a Nauta man. The ceremony lasted a full day and involved incantations, the sacrifice of chickens, and a certain kind of arguing.
It's almost as though during the ceremony they provoked me. They wanted me to get angry, and then they wanted us to resolve it. And we did. And when we had resolved it, and we, like adults, then they said, well, now you're a Nauta man.
He also succeeded, ultimately, in bringing microfinance to his village. After the first failure, he and his two Nauta colleagues brought junior high and high school girls together. Using this music from the local griot player, Wasaria, they introduced life lessons.
Wasaria warns women and young girls against vanity and promiscuity, and then separately from allowing themselves to be exploited sexually for money.
And they gave the girls alternatives by teaching them business skills.
And then we actually started a business with them, which is an income-generating theater group. And so every 3 or 4 months, we would put on a performance and the whole village would turn out and everyone would pay, 20 cents.
That created a small fund from which the girls could take loans. Merkerell Chapman and his co-workers then helped the girls launch and manage their own ventures. The combination of bringing microfinance to the village and achieving social acceptance made Peace Corps a resoundingly positive experience for this volunteer from Omaha, Nebraska. He says he longs to get back to Togo and resume his work with the Nauta. It's a recurring theme that emerges from Peace Corps volunteers. We're going to go back 50 years now to a Peace Corps program with a tumultuous start. Aubrey Brown served in Nigeria from 1961 to 1963. During training, his group lived in dormitories at University College Ibadan, a campus built in the British tradition. Brown sent a postcard to his former college roommate,
describing this very nice room and the marvelous courtyard that it looked out on and the balcony that I had, and said it was by far much better than the room we had shared as freshmen at Harvard.
About the same time, another volunteer living on the same campus in Ibadan painted a different picture in a postcard she wrote, but hers never reached its destination.
Dear Bobo, don't be furious at getting a postcard. I promise a letter next time. I wanted you to see the incredible...
In it, the young woman called the city fascinating, but said training didn't prepare the volunteers for the squalor and primitive living conditions they witnessed in Nigeria.
We had no idea what underdeveloped meant. It really is a revelation, and after we got over the initial horrified shock, a very rewarding experience. Everyone except us lives on the streets, cooks in the streets, sells in the streets, and even goes to the bathroom in the street. Please write, Marge. P.S.
I was astounded at the postcard.
Someone got a hold of it. It's unclear who and how, and circulated it throughout the campus.
How could she have done it? We knew we were going into a situation where there was living conditions were rudimentary.
Nigerian students quickly rallied against the Americans' presence. Murray Frank worked for the Peace Corps in Ibadan at the time. He says University College accepted only Nigeria's best and brightest.
For them, there was no such thing as sleeping with bugs or open sewers. I mean, they were shocked, as we were, and angry in a different kind of way, because they may have known that some of these conditions existed, but for the rest of the world to know it?
The day the postcard became public, Aubrey Brown took a seat as usual in the dorm dining room.
Then I was tapped on the shoulder by the president of the dorm. And he said, we have a place for you over there. And he pointed to the far corner of the dining hall.
Brown had participated in anti-segregation sit-ins in his hometown of Richmond, Virginia.
I immediately knew that I should not accept this. And so I think it's been reported otherwise, but I think I quite politely, firmly, but reasonably politely, declined the offer and said I would not eat.
Brown went back to his room hungry. Descriptions of the postcard incident quickly landed in the newspapers in the United States. In the midst of the hullabaloo, on November 4th, 1961, Massachusetts Congressman Silvio Conti made a stop in Ibadan. While he was there, the congressman interviewed Brown about the incident and recorded the conversation so he could play it on a radio show at home.
Aubrey, there has been a great deal of speculation in the States and editorials I've read that this has injured the Peace Corps and it's lost its effect. Do you have any opinion? What effect this postcard incident had upon the cause of the Peace Corps?
It's a little hard for us to know what effect it's had in the States. Over here, it's also hard to say. I personally think that at the university, it may even have had a beneficial effect. I think it helped to bring to the surface many suspicions of America and of the West that large numbers of students had. They were expressed in a very strong way and a way from which most students ultimately recoiled, to the point that we now have far more friends than we had before the incident had occurred. And with all our friends, I think there's a deeper relationship.
Already on the day Brown refused to eat in a corner, some Nigerian students expressed support for the Peace Corps. Soon after he returned from the dining room, there came a knock at his door. It was an acquaintance Brown says was well respected.
He said he had heard what had happened and he was distressed and that men of goodwill were at work to change the situation.
Brown tears up even 50 years later, remembering the men of goodwill who invited him to tea that night. Murray Frank recalls mediating tense discussions for days among the volunteers. They explored myriad options, leaving, as the Nigerian students initially demanded, staying but writing an apology to newspapers, or even publicly condemning the postcard writer. Ultimately, Frank says, they took no great action.
What we did was go on training. By that time, volunteers were being permitted to come back into the dining rooms and eat with the Nigerian students at one or all, I don't know, dorms. And we continued to mind our business.
The postcard's author quickly apologized, returned to the United States, and left the Peace Corps. In his history of the Peace Corps, When the World Calls, Stan Meisler says the incident helped prepare the young agency for the scrutiny that would come. During the Vietnam War, concerns arose about volunteers protesting overseas, and the Nixon administration nearly shut it down. Meisler worked as a Peace Corps evaluator for 3 years in the 1960s. Evaluators traveled to Peace Corps projects, talked with volunteers, staff, and local residents, and then wrote up reports for Director Sergeant Shriver.
He wanted to find out, most of all, what his problems were. So the more problems you could find, the better he liked it. And he wanted a honest look at a Peace Corps program from someone who was not involved in it.
Meisler wrote about India, Iran, and several countries in Africa before resuming his journalism career. In anticipation of this year's 50th anniversary, he spent 2 years researching both the Washington politics of the Peace Corps and the experiences of volunteers and the people they served. One of the Corps' earliest supporters offered a keen insight at the very beginning. Meisler says India's Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru agreed to host some volunteers, but with a little reluctance. Shriver had lobbied for India's endorsement, and the Punjab region in India wanted a dozen or so volunteers.
What Nehru said was that it'd be a very good experience for your volunteers to go there because your volunteers will learn a great deal.
Meisler says Nehru may have seemed a bit sneering, but he really was quite perceptive.
We've done a great deal of good in the around the world, but there's no doubt that what the volunteers have learned and the impact on America has been far greater, or at least greater, you know, than what the impact has been overseas.
Which brings us to the Peace Corps' third goal, bringing it home. Often, this one is intertwined with the second goal. As volunteers share American culture with their hosts, they are often simultaneously telling folks back home what they're learning about their host country. In that way, Peace Corps broadens cross-cultural understanding even among Americans who will never serve.